At the start of 2020, I had this idea for a salon, but COVID happened in March, and it forced me to close the salon down after a week. About 8 months later, there was a larger salon that was open and available. The deal fell through with that. Fast forward a year, I realized that I had a friend who worked in commercial real estate. So I contacted her, and she gave me a whole list of salons, and only one was on the list that I had not yet seen. And then this happened.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jenny Rudin.
And I'm Katie Demo, and we're the co-founders of Brass.
You're listening to And Then This Happened,
a podcast where we discuss the whirlwinds of entrepreneurship, the ups and downs, all the messiness in between, and what it really takes to build a business.
Katie and I are on this journey right now. We're here to get rid of the glamour, remove the sheen, and demystify the entrepreneurial experience.
That's what this show is all about. Join us for conversations with founders that have seen it all and done it all.
Whether you're building a business yourself,
aspiring to build one someday,
or just love a great story,
we're glad you're here. Welcome to
And Then This Happened. Hi, everyone. We're so glad you're here for today's conversation with Gwen Jamir, CEO of Naturalicious and Good Hair Bar Salons, which is her latest venture.
Gwen grew up in the Midwest, and after college, she got what most would consider a dream job working at Ford Motor Company. She was making six figures. She had all the corporate perks. And it wasn't until she was laid off during a major company reorg that she found herself saddled with legal bills from a painful divorce, and she had to turn a hobby into a money-making hustle.
You'll see fairly quickly that Gwen has the opposite of a defeated attitude or a crisis mentality when confronted with a hardship in her life. Her superpower is her endless well of optimism and a belief that she will absolutely make it through and that things will be okay.
So Gwen decided to sell her all-natural homemade hair products at a local farmer's market and quickly started to grow an extremely loyal customer base. Early on, many women gravitated towards her product, which proved that there was a lack of natural, organic, and plant-based hair solutions for women with textured hair. So Gwen knew there was a market out there.
We cover all sorts of amazing topics during this conversation. We talk about fate, about perseverance, and about Gwen's unshakable desire to make her son proud each and every day. We're so glad you're here for this very real and very motivating conversation with Gwen Jamir. Let's dive in.
Gwen, it is so lovely to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Super excited to be here with you guys again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we like to kick off the show with a question that we ask every entrepreneur here, which is, what was your first exposure to entrepreneurship?
So I used to answer this question that I hadn't had any exposure to entrepreneurship when I was younger. And I think I was thinking about it in terms of family and actually having people who owned businesses, right? But when I really think about it more, I actually did have some examples of entrepreneurship that I hadn't considered before. So I think my first exposure was my karate sensei when I was five. And so he was a guy, he owned a dojo. My dad subsequently later on became a sensei and got his, you know, multiple levels of black belt. He was my teacher. But when I first started in karate, I was five, and he was a guy. He owned a business and he ran the business, you know. And so that was probably my first exposure of seeing someone that owned a business. And it never struck me as like, wow, he owns a business. You know, it was just like, as I think about it now, it was more like, oh, you know, I did have that example. It just wasn't in my family, right? The second example I can think of was when I was probably about maybe in the third or fourth grade, my mom's hairstylist was an entrepreneur. And if you had told me then that I would ever grow up and do anything related to hair, I would have like thought you were nuts. But yeah, she was a very successful salon owner. And when I think about my own journey and how I approach customer experience, and even with Naturalicious and then moving into our new venture, which is the Good Hair Bar, which is a chain of hair salons that we're starting, I keep thinking back to how she treated her guests. You know, I think about her a lot, and I actually need to message her on Facebook and tell her thank you, because I had that example of just extreme. She was just a one-person salon. It's not like she owned a salon and had employees. It was just her. but just extreme like care that went into not just the service she was providing, but the overall experience. She had a workout room in the back, you know, for people who wanted to like work out for some reason. Maybe you wanted to work out and get your hair done at the same time. I don't really know. But she had it in the back. She just like provided this and it was free. It was just available, you know. And she really like was listening to her clients to see what they were talking about. She would provide extensions of her business that helped along whatever they were talking about, you know. And she was fabulous. I mean, she had like the Diana Ross hair. Like she was like everything, you know. She all diamonds on every finger, you know. She was all of it. And so that was probably my second foray into seeing someone who owned a business. But I never saw anyone who had employees. Like they were like self-employed people, you know. And then my third one was that my dad never really owned his own business. But he, as I think about it, he always had aspirations to. I remember him going to look at a building to open his own dojo. And the deal ended up falling through. And so he never opened it. But there were a few things that he was looking to do. And I think that, you know, as much as I say that I haven't had experience with it, you know, I think that bug that he had has rubbed off on me. And so to see how proud he is of me, I think it's him living a bit vicariously, you know, through me and his how proud he is. So
I have no doubt that that's true.
I find it really fascinating that you started your career in a corporate position, but not just corporate, like the most corporate possible sort of position that you're doing, and you transferred to entrepreneurship. And I was hoping that you could just share a little bit about that journey and how you started your career and how you got here.
Sure. Well, I got recruited out of graduate school to work at Ford. Prior to that, I was what's called a final line editor at a publishing company. And this publishing company was paying me $12 an hour. And when I graduated from grad school, I just assumed that they were going to pay me more. I was too young and too naive to know that, hey, you get what you negotiate. And I was just furious that they did not just out of the sky offer me more money, you know? And so I started looking for another job. And very quickly, I got recruited by Ford. By the way, this publishing company I used to work for is no longer in existence, called Allura's Cave. And it was this publishing company that published books, like think 50 Shades of Grey times 10, right?
Oh, wow.
Like, and like their target audience was like 65 to 70 year old white women. And it was just crazy to me that I would like be reading these books and I'm like, you know, just imagining these ladies at home with their cats, you know, reading these books and getting off on these books, you know.
Yeah, so anyway. Amazing.
So I got recruited by Ford.
I'm really glad you gave us that color.
Me too. I was going to say, I was like, oh, how boring publishing. Little dude.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. So I got recruited by Ford shortly after I started kind of looking for a job. And Ford subsequently moved me from Ohio, where I'm from, Cleveland, Ohio, to Detroit, Michigan. And I worked at the headquarters of Ford. And so I'm from a very Midwestern family. Anyone who's from the Midwest will tell you that if you work for a automaker, you know, you've quote unquote made it. And let's not have you work at the headquarters. You're like rich, you know, basically is what they assume. And so I went from making $12 an hour to immediately making six figures. And it was like this like shoom, you know, like, wow. Like I thought I was like baller out here, you know. And so I worked at Ford and they brought me in to be the co-head of global digital marketing, which essentially meant for them social media. But social media was very new at that point. It was almost unheard of for corporate brands to be using social media. And this sounds like it was ages ago, but honestly, this was like 13 years ago. Like it wasn't that long ago. And there were no brands, corporate brands, especially on the level of Ford, that were connecting with consumers in that way, right? Like Facebook was still very much you had to have a .edu to be on Facebook at that point, you know? So it was very peer-to-peer. So what I really gained from Ford was understanding how to build a community when you are a corporate brand, right? Like, how do you come from behind the logo? How do you come from behind the computer and really get people, consumers, guests, clients, whatever you call them, to connect with you on an emotional level and build that emotional connection so that they're making decisions, heart-based decisions, not necessarily just logic-based decisions, right? And so that was really what I feel like I gained the most from my time at Ford. I eventually ended up, I got married, I had my son, and I ended up getting laid off from Ford when they went through a transition. So they got new leadership. The previous CEO, Alan Mulally, who was a dream to work for, he left and they brought in new leadership and they pretty much cleaned house. And I was one of the casualties of that. So when that happened, it was, okay, now what? And so I had been kind of tinkering around in my kitchen with these hair products that I had created just for myself. They weren't supposed to be a business. It was not for anyone else. Although I was giving it away to friends and then their friends were asking for it, but I was still pretty much giving it away or charging like just the cost of the product. I always knew I was going to be an entrepreneur, but I did not know that was how it was going to manifest. I never, ever thought that I was going to be doing hair. Like, my hair was a mess when I was a kid. So, you know, for me to be doing hair and having it be my livelihood and me provide jobs for other people and it be their livelihoods too is like, I could have never dreamed this.
Amazing. Well, actually, I'm curious. You just said that you always knew you would do something entrepreneurial, but where did that come from?
I just always hated working for other people.
Okay.
I always hated it. Like, it literally made my soul hurt going to work, not having control over my time. I knew always, even when I was in college, I just knew, like, I liked the idea of having control over what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. It's not easy being like a mom entrepreneur. It's really not. But I actually think that sometimes the structure from the corporate world actually might be even more challenging. Like if you're expected to be at a 7 a.m. meeting when you have
100%.
I can't imagine.
I felt so sad for people who worked in corporate or at a job where maybe not corporate, but, you know, a job where they had to go to during COVID. You know, it was like, how do you work? And you have to, you know, somehow provide for your kid who's at home now, you know, and it's just like, as much as I complained about being at home and my son having to homeschool my son, it was an option for me, you know, and there's so many people who that wasn't an option for, who had to figure it out, you know, and so I'm very grateful that for the entrepreneurial life that it affords me. And I think a lot of people also just assume that automatically, when you become an entrepreneur, your time is your time and you've got this freedom and you're all drinking Mai Tais on the beach somewhere. And it's just like not the case. You know, they sold me this dream and then I got this. You know, it's just like that's not what it is. But, you know, you do have more flexibility. And so I was very proud that at least during COVID, we were able to provide the same sort of flexibility to our staff because it's only right. You know, it was such a horrible situation everybody was dealing with. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were about to tell us about how you did get laid off. That sort of gave you space to be thinking about this product you'd been creating for yourself. Never thought it would be a hair brand, but somehow you got there. Tell us about those early months right after you were let go, when the idea really had space to grow and develop a little bit.
Well, yeah, it had space to grow, but it was also like, it wasn't like I'd had time to just kind of sit and wait and figure it out, right? It was like, we've got to hit the ground running right away because this mortgage is due in 30 days or 15 days or however long I had. I was also recently divorced. So I was going through the divorce at the same time being laid off. And because I was going through the divorce, even though I had the six-figure job, I had no money because I was paying for both sides of the divorce because I wanted out of that marriage so bad. So it was like, here I am, a single mom, no money, all the same bills that I had before, but it's a one income household now. All my family is in Ohio. I'm all by myself. Like, there's no time to like sit on my laurels and like, you know, strategize. It's like, what's the first thing we can do right now that's going to make money? And it was go down to Eastern Market, which in Detroit is our open air market. Go down there and sell your stuff. But I didn't have enough money to pay for a table at Eastern Market. So I just took a table in my garage, got a tablecloth from the dollar store, put it over my table and just set up shop and then pretended I was supposed to be there and hoped that like no one would come, you know, kick me out. I also had my son. So I figured like if I had my baby, how cruel could you be like to kick a mom out with an infant, you know, and so, or the toddler. So, you know, I would take him and people would come over and they would say, oh my gosh, he's so cute. You know, what's his name? And I would use that opportunity to tell them about the Naturalicious products and then subsequently sell them, the products. And so I would sell out almost every weekend. And I would use that money to then cover the bills for the household. And the rest of the money I would use to buy more products to replenish my cost of goods. So that's how it started. And then Whole Foods was opening in Detroit. Got an opportunity to have a meeting with them and got into Whole Foods. It was one store, but I, you know, not pretended, but I basically marketed it like it was every Whole Foods. I was like, we're in Whole Foods now, you know, and that really helped to validate my brand to people. Because when you own a personal care brand, a lot of times people think like it's like a hobby, you know, it's like, oh, this is cute. You know, she's in her basement making up little stuff. Like, no, dear, this is a whole legit thing, you know. So that really helped a lot in just validating the brand of people and making them realize like, oh, this is for real. We should probably support her.
Yeah, for sure. So I feel like this is a nice segue into a question I was talking to you about before, just the role that fate and perseverance plays in an entrepreneurial journey. Tell us a little bit about your experience with both of those things. I think it's clear that your story has required or has benefited from both. And we'd love to know a little bit about your philosophy on those two things.
Yeah, well, I've always been an extremely optimistic person. I fully believe that everything is always working out in our favor. No matter if we can see it right now, it could feel like the most tragic thing that's happening, but everything is working out in the end. Like, even when things happen and it seems really like things that are annoying, right? So, like, for example, I had a flight a couple weeks ago. Flight got delayed like 4 or 5 hours, right? And it put everything back. It was like a huge nightmare for most people. But I just kept thinking, like, I don't know what God's protecting me from. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that flight's delayed, but what if that flight crashed, right? You know, the flight that I was supposed to be on. Like, who knows, you know? And so we may not always see it. We may never, ever know what it is that's working out for our good, but I 100% know that everything always is. And so even when I was going through the divorce and getting laid off from Ford and all that sort of stuff, like, I still knew that it was going to be okay. Now, I had $32 in the bank and I was a single mother. And it, you know, for most people, I think that they would have been like, oh my gosh, like, you know, my life is over. Like, things really suck. Like, I'm moving back home with my parents. But I was like, absolutely not. Like, if God brought me to this place, he's going to get me through this place. Like, absolutely. He's not going to leave me, you know? So that's kind of how I've always viewed things all my life. Like, I've always been like that. I don't know if it's just I can't really say I was taught that. It's just how I've always been, you know?
Can we dig into that for a second? Cause I feel like a similar sort of sense for myself. That's how I get through the hard times. But when things are really hard, and I do imagine that your mind does wander to these sort of like yikes kind of places. And is that the self-talk that you use to bring yourself back? Like, is that what are you sort of like reeling yourself back, or you just never go there? Like, tell us a little bit about that.
You know, my mom, she passed away in October, but she was she was worst case scenario for everything. And I think perhaps because she was so extreme with her assumptions about what could happen, that it was like, well, I know it can't be as nearly as bad as she's assuming it's going to be. So there has to be an opposite, right? And I think maybe that was it for me. You know, I just remember being laid off from Ford and she's like, oh my God, what are you going to do? You're going to be homeless now. You're going to be in a shelter and Caden's going to get taken away by CPS. And I'm like, no, none of that's going to happen, you know? And so I don't really have too many moments where I'm feeling like super downtrodden. And so I don't usually have to reel myself back. It's usually me reeling other people back. And so therefore, I think I don't really have the opportunity to get there because I'm so busy trying to help them get out of that pit, you know? Like, I have people who are around me, and it's just like any little thing goes wrong, it's like, oh my God, you know? And I'm just like, relax, everything's working out for our favor, you know, and so it might just be because I'm helping them that I'm inadvertently helping myself at the same time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like before I had even gotten there.
Yeah, no, that's
very self-aware.
Yeah.
Actually.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So like in helping others work through those dark times, you're sort of reinforcing these principles to yourself, kind of just
exactly
bracing down and underscoring that those are the philosophies you live by, kind of coaching yourself as much as you're coaching others through it. I would imagine that plays a pretty big role in your leadership style. What's it been like running a team and managing a team of people with Naturalicious?
Well, it's been really interesting in the wake of work changing, right? Like before, it's like we could do like team events and like everyone's in the same office and you could kind of catch a vibe from everybody. Now it's like everyone's spaced out, you know? So like in the Naturalicious office specifically, there are three people who work in the office now. Everyone else, you know, because COVID was like, hey, you can work at home. You know, they were like, hey, I might as well work at home. And there's no reason why they can't. Like, they work just fine at home. They get the job done. But it does make me sad that we don't have the same connection that we had before. Like, you know, one of my employees, she's a graphic designer. You know, I remember when she started and she was like going through some relationship stuff. And for some reason, she just took to me as like her sounding board, you know? And it was almost like we had this like big sister, little sister relationship with that was separate from work. And she had like just some personal challenges. And, you know, I was like encouraging her to go to therapy and, you know, things that you just can't get. And that was just me seeing her like, what's wrong? You need to talk? Let me know, you know? But I can't see her now to know if something's wrong, you know? So I miss that a lot. And so when it comes to like leadership, I think I've had to learn to let go more in this COVID, you know, world, or, you know, the great, what they call it? The great, not recession.
Resignation.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, I haven't had anybody resign. So that's amazing. I'm really happy about that and proud of that because I have an amazing team. But with that, it's like letting go and just saying, hey, I trust you to be able to do this because I know that I trust myself enough to know that I hired good people and I'm going to give you this task. So it's been a lot more delegating than before, where I would delegate before, but it's less hands-on now, which is actually really good for me. Because I've got a million other decisions to make in a day, you know, and just trusting that. Because before I would do all the approvals. So now it's just like, I gave you this job. You've been here long enough. Send it to your superior and then she'll approve it, you know, and like just letting other people do the stuff so that I can focus on steering the ship. And that's been really interesting for me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually such a silver lining kind of a, you know, thing to put a pin on, because you're right, like that, it having that space and needing to therefore empower others to make those decisions on their own, in their own, you know, under their own jurisdictions, kind of, it's a super efficient. So talk about the universe throwing you a hardship, but that really ultimately has an upside for your business.
Right. I was actually going to say, like, there must have been like a release that has come from you giving up a little bit of that control. What are the good things that have happened from that?
Well, because I've had to give up the control, it actually allowed space for me to open the second business. Like, there's no way that I could be fully immersed in the day-to-day of Naturalicious and still have the energy and brain capacity and creativity available to also do a startup like Good Hair Bar. This is a very big undertaking that we're working on for this chain of salons. And it's the first of its kind in my target audience, you know, who we target. And it's just like, there's a lot riding on it, you know? And so it's like, Naturalicious is running on its own pretty much at this point, which is an amazing testament, right? Because so many entrepreneurs do have control issues, right? Because it's our baby, right? So it's like, we want it to be right. But two, to know that the team is just like going and going and going in not really my absence, like I'm still on for team meetings and that sort of thing, but I'm letting them lead the meetings. I'm just there in case for some reason they need me, but they don't usually need me, you know? And I think it actually, it makes them less have less anxiety because it's not like the big bad boss is like hovering over them, you know? So it gives them more creativity space and more wherewithal to just kind of like do fun things and try things and know that they aren't going to get fired or reprimanded or written up because they tried something, maybe it didn't work, you know? It's just like they have the space to do that. And that's been cool. So I would say that, you know, the big thing is being able to start the Good Hair Bar and be able to focus on it daily, because Naturalicious is run by an amazing group of people who do their job really well.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Katie and I still have a really small team and we really are in the business, working in it every day still. And you're so right, though, that North Star needs to be, what are the steps I need to take to get to a point where I really am letting the machine run its course without me? And, you know, that's the goal, Gwen. Really, what you've built is like, that's the dream. I want to go back to something you were just saying, though. You know, in the earlier stages of the business, though, you really don't have a choice sometimes, but to be really in the thick of it and you know, on the ground, boots on the ground style. So tell us a little bit about how, and that coupled with your philosophy, which I actually totally agree with too, about how you will not make progress and you will not be able to scale your company or bring your vision to life if you're not also investing in your own well-being and making sure you're sleeping enough, eating right, you know, taking breaks now and then. In the early days of Naturalicious, when you still were building the business up to the stage it's at now, how did you reconcile those two things? Did you prioritize your own well-being? Obviously, time with your son too in the mix as well. How did you think about balancing those things?
So I didn't. I think that, you know, work-life balance is like a facade that doesn't exist, especially if you have children. Katie, you know this. You have to create the balance. It doesn't just happen, right? So my priority, I think when I started Naturalicious, when I got laid off from my job and all that craziness was happening, I thought about what I wanted in the end. And so in the end, all I wanted was for my son to be proud of me. And so he was 2 at that point. And so he's 11 now. And so I knew that whatever story he was going to tell, I needed to make sure that it was going to be a story that he was proud to tell, right? I didn't want it to be a story of defeat. I wanted it to be one of triumph. I didn't want him to say, you know, my mom and I, you know, she got laid off from her job and she left my dad and life was really hard and we moved back home with my grandparents and, you know, we had no money and like we were on welfare, you know, like I didn't want that story to be the story that he told. I wanted him to be like, you know what, my mom got laid off from her job. She left my dad. She left this like abusive relationship and decided to choose herself and me in the process. And she started this company like 30 days later and it's, you know, it grew and we're great, you know, whatever. And now she gives back and she's philanthropic. And yeah, you know, I wanted that to be the story. And so in the early stages, there was no like choosing me. It was just like the business all the time. And you have to have an elevator, right? So like at some point you get to the top of the elevator, but you have to start at the bottom and you gradually take that elevator up. So I never want to make it seem like, oh, I was always, you know, self-care all the time. And, you know, I was just hanging out and taking days off. Like, no, there were no days off. There were no hours off. It was day in, day out, being a single mother while also running a business, which is essentially another child. Only the business never becomes self-sufficient on its own. Like the child at least gets to a point where he or she can dress themselves and feed themselves, right? Like the business doesn't do that. So the business over time actually takes more energy sometimes than the kid does. And I always used to say that Caden was my son and that Naturalicious was my daughter. And so I had 2 kids, right? And so no, absolutely not. No, there was no prioritization of self-care. Now, I do feel like self-care, like the term self-care and the notion of it has gained more popularity in more recent years. But when I started, which was 9 years ago, people weren't really talking about that so much. So I think just the fact that it's on social media all the time and is on the tips of people's tongue a lot has just given way to more people making it a priority. But when I started, you know, the thing was team, no sleep. And so it was like, you got to grind, you got to hustle, you got to like, you know, bust your ass all the time in order to be successful, right? And, you know, you can sleep when you're dead, you know. Well, I don't want the fact that I'm working so hard to cause me to die, you know. So, like, I want to be able to rest and relax. And so over time, I started to prioritize it more. And then it was like, I have to make sure I have time for my son, because I also, as much as I want him to be proud of me, I also don't want him to be one of those kids who, you know, felt like he grew up in a successful household, but his mom never had time for him. You know, so it was like, okay, we've got to have a balance here. And so I think I've done a good job of that. And he tells me I've done a good job of it. So, but there's definitely got to be, there's levels that you have to get to. And it takes time. I mean, I'm at 9 years now with Naturalicious, and I'm just now at the point where the business can self-sufficiently run itself. You know, I think there's always this whole social media race, and we see all these people in businesses, and it just seems like they're doing everything so fast. And it's like, man, they did $1 million in like 4 months. Like, it took me, you know, 2 years to get there, you know, whatever. But a lot of that is just for clicks. And it's also not always the whole story, right? Like, sure, if you spend $2 million in ads and you make $1 million, well, sure, but who cares? Because you weren't profitable, you know?
So, exactly.
So there's always different, there's always more to the story.
Yeah.
And so
the glamorizing of certain entrepreneurs over the last like few years was certainly something that would get under my, not maybe get under my skin, but get into my head a little bit about like, wait a minute, this business started at the same time at Brass and now they're doing $100 million in revenue. How is that, you know, how is that possible? And, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, obviously. And so like allowing yourself to make those comparisons, but then, you know, and now present day, you look at the articles that are being written about those entrepreneurs and it's the truth comes out, basically. There is value in taking time to build a business, lay a solid foundation, and grow something slow and steady. I think that's really smart what you did. And I have to say, I think that narrative that you sort of replayed in your head, like what you want your son to be proud of you and to always be able to rely on that and go back to that, that is so critical to me, to like, to the journey is like, cause that elevator ride is long and, and it can be really slow. And, when you're unable to do self-care and you're just on this like slow moving elevator, that little reminder to yourself can bring you so much peace. So thanks for sharing that with us. Cause I feel like that's a really good lesson and important for other people to sort of to know and to try and build.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, nothing grows, like nothing in nature grows, like unless they're taking hormones, you know, like chickens that they put on, you know, farms, but nothing grows from like 0 to 60 in a day, you know?
A really great tool that you just mentioned, Gwen, is kind of like identifying from day one what your North Stars are, things that you just constantly want to strive for. And I feel like you touched on one, which is, of course, doing this every day for your son so that he could be proud of you and hold his head high, which, of course, I'm sure was true for you, too. You believed in yourself and believed you deserved that as well. But it also tethers directly to the goals of your business, right, with Naturalicious, which is to empower women to feel absolutely 100% satisfied with the beauty that they have come into this world with, and that these products are meant to serve them to that end, to build that confidence each and every day, and that the brand was really born for that purpose, right? So yeah, tell us a little bit about that mission and how that's been a through thread as you've grown the company.
I would just always see like the standard of beauty constantly changing, right? When I was younger in the 90s, it was like, you know, really like the supermodels, like the really tall, really thin, beautiful faces, you know, sort of person. And then like now you look at it, it's like, you know, it kind of got into like the Kim Kardashian era. And I hate like people like just like give her so much crap, you know, but there's always something about ourselves that we don't like. Now, I'm completely fine with people wanting to change things about themselves and wanting to like get better. But to do so because you feel like you're not enough is not okay, right? And so it was like, okay, I want my brand to embody helping women realize that they, as they are born, are the standard. Like, you are the standard of beauty. I don't care what is going on social media or what TV is saying over here. Like, you and you alone, you need to wake up in the morning and look at yourself like, damn, girl, like, that's how you need to feel when you wake up in the morning, you know? So how do we get people there, right? Because it's not just products. Like, there's a lot of products, you know? But it's community, it's empowerment, it's affirmations, it's a lot of it is community, you know? And so it's like, let's create this space where women feel safe and they feel beautiful. Like, it's almost like they're allowed to feel beautiful, because there's also the side of it where it's like, you're not beautiful enough, but if you feel that you're beautiful, then you're pompous and you're arrogant. And it's like, well, where do I fall? Like, I'm not allowed to be confident, but I'm also not allowed to, like, feel like I'm enough. So it's like, there's never enough for us, you know? So I wanted everyone to feel that they were the standard of beauty. So Naturalicious, you know, was born with that in mind. And so it's the same thing with the new business, with the Good Hair Bar. It's like, that's really an extension of Naturalicious. So at the Good Hair Bar, we're actually only using Naturalicious products. And it's like, okay, let's take the same experience that we've been able to create for people in the e-commerce space. And also, obviously, we're sold in stores like Ulta and things like that. But most of our sales come from e-com, right? So it's like, let's take that like virtual sort of thing that we've been able to do and bring it in person. And we'll provide you with the actual service. So it's one thing to do it yourself, but then to have someone else do it for you, it's like, it's a whole different thing, you know? And let's, again, create an experience. So it's been all about the experience, because there's a lot of hair salons, but there's not a lot of salons that have a VIP area, which we do. There's not a lot of salons with a DJ and a live band, which we have, with a bar, with a mixologist. You know, like, we're making this fun. Like, it's not just like, oh, come get your hair done and get your nails done and leave. It's like, stay, like, engage in the community that's here, these other people that want to see you win, you know, and just enjoy being a woman. Like, being a woman is so amazing. It's so great, you know? And it's like, we are, again, often made to feel like we are just, we can't be confident, but we're also not enough. And so I want you to be confident and be okay with being confident. And, you know, so that's where we're kind of expanding the brand from just Naturalicious to the salons, and then taking those all over the country to help out in that area too.
So we knew that in 2019, early 2020, you were wanting to open a salon so that you could really bring Naturalicious into the salon environment, show women what the Naturalicious experience was and how to use the products. But the story definitely didn't get started then, and the path was long and winding. Tell us a little bit about your journey towards finding a salon for Naturalicious.
So back in February of 2020, I had this idea to start a salon. And the goal really was just to show how Naturalicious products could help the hair, right? It wasn't like this big vision that I have now. It was just like, let's just kind of use this to display how the products work. So March of 2020, we opened. And as March of 2020, COVID happened, right? So we were open for a week when COVID hit. And it forced me to close the salon right away. But I was still paying rent on this salon suite from March through October. Because I just thought, like most people, like, COVID's going to end and everything's going to be back open. And COVID just didn't end. So I was like, I'm done paying rent on this place. So I get out of the lease in October of 2020. November of 2020, I get a call from a guy who is the owner of a chain of barbershops here in Detroit. He's got a number of these barbershops, and he had one of them that was really large, and he was looking to get rid of that one because he wanted to focus on his smaller shop so that he could start franchising them. So he gives me a call. He's like, listen, I got this shop. I'm currently in a lease for it. It's downtown Detroit. It's renovated. You can come and check it out. And I was thinking maybe you could take over the lease. Perfect. This sounds like a good solution, right? So I go and I visit the space. Beautiful spot, right? Large, much larger than the one or two chair spot I had. They maybe had like six chairs, right? So I go there and it's already nicely renovated. So he and I are having some conversations back and forth. For whatever reason, the deal ended up not going through. Like, he ended up giving it to somebody else. And I was just like, man. So whole year goes by. And I start thinking about the bug to, like, get the salon open just kept itching at me. Like, it just wouldn't leave me alone. So I said, okay, I'm not renting anything. I'm done with renting. I'm only going to buy a building. So I go online looking for buildings, and I'm finding all these buildings. And so I go looking around downtown, me and my friend and my son, and I found this one building. And it didn't really work so well, but I was trying to make it work. It was like this almost like 80s Art Deco themed building. And I was like, this could work. And he's like, absolutely not. Like, this is glass block windows. There's no sunlight in here. And it's weird. Like, no, you can't have this building. This is not the building. So I'm like, we're never going to find a building. I'm just like, this is never going to happen. So I got an idea to call my friend Rachel. So Rachel told me 6 years ago that she was going into commercial real estate. 6 years later, here I am calling Rachel like, hey, are you still doing commercial real estate? She's like, yeah. I'm like, hey, so I am in the market for a salon and I'm willing to do the build out. I'm willing to do all the things. I just need a building. You know, here's about the size that I need, all the specs. So she sends me a list the next week of a bunch of buildings. I've seen every building on this list already, except for one. So I see this building and I'm like, oh, this looks like it could work. So I actually go to the building. It's already a salon. So I drive over to the salon and I'm thinking that I'm just going to walk in and like kind of look around. But the owners happen to be at the front desk. So I'm like, hey, they're like, how can I help you? I'm like, there's no black people in the salon, right? So I'm like, they don't clearly do black hair. So I'm like, do you guys do black hair? Like, I need a reason to be there, right? So I'm like, do you guys do black hair? And they're like, sometimes, not really. I'm like, oh, my friend told me to come like check this place out. Like, I don't know what to say, you know, because I'm not expecting the owners to be there. I thought it was gonna be like this front desk person. So anyway, I'm like trying to like look around as I'm asking these questions. And she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just, you know, wondering what kind of hair you do here. So I end up leaving and I call Rachel immediately. I'm like, Rachel, I don't need to see any other buildings. Like, this is it. This is the building. And that was in November of 2021. This is all about like the optimism and the fate, right? So I get this building fully renovated, came renovated. It was renovated as of 2018. So it was brand new, 4,400 square feet, huge, 16 chairs at this point. 16 chairs, full nail section with five spaces, a massage room, a lash room, and a facial room. Saw that in November of 2021. March 22nd, we closed on this building, right? And so now I own the building. And I'm just like, what are the odds of me seeing all of these buildings on this list, except for this one, and just the timing lining up where I saw the building, I bought the building, you know what I mean? And so it allows me to be able to build this chain, this brand that I'm looking to build much more effectively and more seamlessly, because we're not pigeonholed into the rent and having to worry about not having parking and all that kind of stuff. So I just feel like that's like a big fate sort of thing. And also being optimistic enough to know that like, even though the first two places didn't work out, like that wasn't the end of it.
Really, Good Hair Bar seems to me like the inevitable and very natural progression of everything you've been doing with Naturalicious.
Yeah, it is.
And it all feels like a derivative of you and your spirit, yeah. I think, which is so cool.
Yeah, it is. It's a natural progression. I mean, I'm also a big person on innovation. And so rather than chief executive officer, I call myself the chief innovation officer. And when I looked at the hair salon industry, it's been the same for like 75 years, if not more. And in fact, not only has it been the same, but it's actually gotten a little bit worse. The customer experience or the client experience, especially in specifically in the black hair community. And it was like, why has no one decided that this can be different? Like, why is it that at one place you can either get great hair, your hair looks fantastic, but your service is super crappy, or the service is phenomenal and the environment is beautiful, but no one knows how to do your hair? Like, why has no one married these two? This is like a no-brainer to me, you know? And so it was like, this is something that we can disrupt. So let's do that. And there's also currently no Black-owned large chains of hair salons. So that causes a problem, because for our counterparts, they, you know, perhaps you guys can go to, I'm sure you have your favorite stylist, right? But you could, if you were out of town, you could go to a Fantastic Sam's if you wanted to. You know, they know how to do your hair. You could go to a Bowricks or whatever, you know, whatever is in that town. We don't have that option. If our stylist leaves the town, or she dies, God forbid, or decides to stop doing hair, we don't have a stylist anymore. We're just out here like lost, you know? And so it's like, why can't I go out of town to Miami and have a stylist in Miami who knows how to do my hair, Why is that? And I can trust that she knows how to do my hair. Why aren't all these people trained the exact same way? You know? And that just really frustrated me. And so it was like, there it is. That's the disruption that we're going to solve.
I mean, you're right. That's the problem. That's a problem you're solving. It's incredible.
That's so huge. You just keep proving over and over again that your optimism gives you the confidence to make decisions that are not just serving yourself, but serving other people. And you've just built an incredible business. And it sounds like you have a huge vision for where you guys are going. It's very impressive. And it's been really amazing hearing your story.
Well, Gwen, this has just been such a joy. It's lifted my spirits to hear your story. And I've feel like I've personally gained a lot from all that you have to offer. And this was a fun hour. Thanks for spending it with us.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys, as always. And I would love to come back on in the future. Just let me know when you want me.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the show. We want to take a quick moment to thank our episode sponsor, Octane AI.
The Klaviyo and Octane AI integration enables brands like Naturalicious to collect customer data with a quiz and use it for personalization at scale.
Learn more at octaneai.com. Now let's get back to the conversation.
So a three-year hunt for the perfect hair salon is certainly something that I feel like a lot of people might just give up after a couple of years and a couple of defeats and roadblocks. But Gwen just kept going. She found a way to see her vision through.
I just thought that was such an incredible conversation, and it touched on so many elements of entrepreneurship that are essential for success. And there are the like concrete things, like coming up with a great product that you know there's a consumer base out there for, and coming up with sort of a philosophy of, you know, making every woman know and believe that they can be beautiful, and creating products that support that and a community that supports that. Those were very tactical things she had to do. But I also love that Gwen just has this like unwavering amount of optimism that lets her confront new business challenges, like, for example, expansion into a new arena with her hair salons, with just sort of like a faith that it will work out, and that once the seed has been planted, she will see it through, even if it does take multiple years for that next chapter to become a reality. It reminds me a little bit of what we've gone through over the past few years, wouldn't you say?
For sure. I mean, it's one of those things where if you told me like at the beginning of COVID, when we thought that we were just going to be out of our office for 2 weeks, that if you told me actually you're like facing a 2.5 year slog of like getting your business through an extremely difficult time, it would have been crippling. You know, that amount of time to think that you're going to be really doing some serious problem solving and trying to cobble together your business basically for a 2.5 year time period is just, that's daunting.
If you know that the timeline is going to be 2 years out, that's overwhelming. But being unable to see how long the slog will take and just how long you'll have to endure it, instead looking day in and day out at taking baby steps towards that solution. Like Gwen had to, you know, see 4 different salons before she finally found this last opportunity. But at each of those junctures, she didn't anticipate necessarily that that wouldn't be the salon she would be committing to.
That's exactly right. It's almost like what you don't know helps you in this situation. Right. You know, it really helps you. It allows you to just put one foot in front of the other. You don't know what the future holds. You don't know that you've got a 3-year journey ahead of you. It just allows you to compartmentalize and just make each decision as they come. And I think that looking back on it is probably what has helped us get through these last few years, and certainly what allowed Gwen to stick to her original vision and ensure that she found the salon that like really is going to help her grow a thriving business that is obviously so much needed in this market. So I really admire her for that. And I just couldn't be more thrilled to see what she does with these salons.
Yeah, congrats, Gwen. And thanks to the listeners for hanging with us through this great conversation.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of And Then This Happened.
To hear more episodes, go to klaviyo.com/podcast to explore the archive.
And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.
For everything that happens between now and next time,
good luck. We're with you, and we know you'll figure it out.
And Then This Happened is a Hit Start Media production co-created with Klaviyo. Klaviyo is a unified customer platform for email, SMS, and more that empowers online brands to own their data and grow on their own terms.
We're your hosts and producers, Katie Demo and Jenny Rudin. Hit Start Media co-founder Theo Miller is creative director. Audio production is done by Nick Canepa and Matthew Sasaki, with production management by Olivia Laurie.
Thanks again for listening.